The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Buddy, welcome in to the Tuesday edition of The Drive. What's turned out to be a pretty nice day. I was surprised by the rain in the middle of the night last night. But, hey, I mean, you know, it didn't do any damage or anything like that. It's turned out to be a nice day. A great day to be here talking about another unbelievable finish. I mean, yesterday we were talking about Saturday and college football and the crazy games, including Auburn's thrilling 4-overtime win over Texas A&M. And now today, what a tournament. What a tournament is going on in Maui. Some unbelievable ball games. Last night, Auburn spots Iowa State 18 points, down 16 at the half, come back. And I mean, they tied the game by a third of the way through the second half, but it still took longer before they finally took the lead. And Auburn on a tip-in by Janai Broom, who's falling to the floor, cramping with 1.2 seconds to go, downs Iowa State 83-81. And they will now play a North Carolina team that came back from 18 at the half to win last night 92-90. Over Dayton. I mean, there have been some unbelievable ball games in this tournament, and we have a short time. Let's go ahead and get to the voice, if he still has one left after those finishes the last 3 days. The voice of the Auburn Tigers out in Maui, Andy Burcham, joining us here as we get started with the Tuesday Drive. Andy, what an unbelievable 3 days you have had.
Hey, Andy.
Hey, Dan, Bill. It's been great. It's been fun, you know. I mean, I knew going into this stretch of the potential with A&M and then last night with Iowa State and then the second and the third game here and then back home, head to Tuscaloosa for the Iron Bowl and then Duke a week from tomorrow. So, but boy, the first two games of this stretch have been unbelievable. With Auburn jumping out to the big lead on Saturday and then falling behind and getting the last-second field goal by walk-on Ian Vachon to tie it and then winning that game in 4 overtimes on Saturday. And then last night, falling behind by 18 in the first half, 16 at halftime, and then starting the second half on a 14-2 run, finally got the lead about two-thirds of the way through the second half, and then it went back and forth. And it actually, you know, Iowa State had the ball with a little bit of time left on the play clock and the game clock. Auburn knew it was going to get the ball back at some point, but they turned it over. And Janai Broom comes up with the eventual steal there and then runs to the other end of the floor, sets a high post screen for Denver Jones, follows Denver to the basket, and Denver's shot looked like that was going down, but it didn't. It popped out. And then Janai was there for the putback. And, yeah, he was falling down, Bill, with that cramp, but smiling and celebrating, all in one motion.
Yeah, he was half sitting as he was reaching for his leg, and then the smile. I mean, because the first thing you think is, oh, Janai's down, but then you could see his face. And you go, that's a cramp, thank goodness. But, I mean, a joy that was joyous pain for Janai last night.
It was, and I think he was cramping. He had to leave his post-game press conference because the cramps were still there. And now one of the things that, you know, Randall Dickey, who does such a good job in his first year full-time as our analyst on the Auburn Sports Network, he said one thing, and he's been here many times with different teams, to Hawaii, not always the Maui Invitational. He said, one thing you got to watch out for, you've got to hydrate plenty when you're here in Hawaii because you're out and about, you're walking the beach or or whatever, and it's a long, long flight here. I mean, we're four time zones away. And he said one of the big keys is hydration. And so I'm hoping that they got some fluids. I'm sure they did. Got some fluids into Janai as now Auburn gets set for a North Carolina team. And as you mentioned, Bill, they're down 20, or they're down what? They come from 21 down in the second half.
Yeah, they were down 18 at half.
It's their largest second half comeback in school history.
Wow.
And it's the second greatest comeback in school history. They came from 22 down at one point to beat Wake Forest a few years ago. So both of these teams come storming back last night, and now we get ready for what should be a fabulous semifinal in the Maui Invitational. The first semifinal will be a good one as well, with Memphis that withstood the overtime game against UConn yesterday, and Michigan State. So the four teams still playing for a championship are Memphis, Michigan State, Auburn, and North Carolina.
And Andy, it's a big win. I mean, that's the kind of game, and we've had now two of them in the first five games of the season. I mean, these are the kind of victories that a really special team can pull off, considering where Auburn was in both situations, down five with 6 minutes to play in Houston, and then where they were early.
Down six last night. I'm not sure what it was, but it was 6 points at one point, pretty late in this one.
Oh, high leverage.
Auburn was going to pull away a little bit, and to Iowa State's credit, they come roaring back as well, and that they actually had a shot at the game winner before that turnover.
Oh, that first half was as good a half as anyone has played against Auburn this year. The way Iowa State was playing.
49 points for Iowa State in the first half.
And it was
phenomenal.
It was imperative for Auburn to play well in that first 5-7 minutes, and in the second half.
How about CBM?
Well, and you know, he scored 2 points in the first half, banged a knee at some point going for a ball, and was out for the half. And that's a nice work by Clark Pearson, Auburn's athletic trainer as well. And then Chad Baker Mazzara, I watched him warm up before the half. And at one point he was hobbling a little bit. And as he kept just running back and forth from one sideline to the other near midcourt, you could tell it started to loosen up for him. And he was electric, absolutely electric in that second half last night. And Auburn wouldn't have won without he. It wouldn't have won without Janai Broome, obviously. Let me tell you another guy that makes a difference. And he's not getting a lot of playing time this year, and started almost every game for Auburn a year ago, and that's Chris Moore.
Yep.
As a senior out of West Memphis, Arkansas. But you watch the minutes that he's in a ball game and what he does in that short burst. It's inspiring to me to watch that guy. Because he's a guy that has started most of his career at Auburn. And that's not the case this year. And it does not matter to him when he is in there, and when he is one of the best guys for this team in the locker room and on the bench as well.
Yeah, I noticed as I was following along, I'm also watching the live stats and everything. I believe Chris was +8 in the limited time that he was in the game.
Exactly. So, I mean, it shows you the impact. Mm-hmm. That he's having. It's a hot Pettifer with another big game. Miles Kelly, Denver Jones. You can just go up and down the lineup to guys that made a huge difference in that one last night. And now you got to flush it. It's on now to North Carolina, which stages a comeback. And we talked about Iowa State yesterday and how good their guards are. North Carolina's guards, shooting guards, are better. I mean, they had one guy that scored 30, another guy scored 27 last night. And by the way, that's like this. For Davis, that's like 6 30-point games in his career. Behind Phil Ford, he is the second leading scorer among guards in North Carolina history. Now think about who's played guard at North Carolina. And this guy is their second best scoring guard behind Phil Ford in UNC history.
Yeah, there was a guy named Jordan that played a little guard there too.
Heard him. Vince Carter. Okay, I mean, Vince Carter was pretty good.
There have been a couple guys there that you know about and what they have done. So I look forward to this one tonight. Voices is returning.
Good.
As it does. And I'll be ready. Randall will be ready. We'll be ready on the Auburn Sports Network.
Hey, that's all right. If it takes tonight and tomorrow night with those kinds of finishes, you can rest, on Thanksgiving on the way back and get ready for Tuscaloosa.
Andy, the the guys coming off the bench last night, you mentioned Chris Moore, Dylan, who, you know, is still, I mean, he played huge minutes in the second half, and I would add Tahad, because you can, the minutes that Auburn is able to give those guys helps keep your Jani Brooms and your Chad Baker Mazar is fresh for the final possessions of basketball games.
And Chaney was in foul trouble last night.
Chaney was in foul trouble, so Auburn went with the double big for a lot of the, you know, a lot of the final 6-7 minutes. It wasn't just in the, I mean, Tahad hit a couple of shots. I mean, being the only freshman in a rotation with these seniors, you know, it takes a special kind of kid to fit right in, and it seems like he fits right in.
He does, and I think the depth played a factor last night. Auburn was deeper. Auburn's bench played more minutes than Iowa State's depth last night. And when you get in a tournament where you're playing 3 games in 3 days, and the last time Auburn did this, it won the SEC tournament in Nashville, having that depth will help you immensely as you get to game 2 and game 3.
Talking with the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham. Just quick notes there, as we were saying. It seems like it's been more than just a few days since that Texas A&M game finished. What an emotional win it was! What a huge win for those 29 seniors that were honored, and now Auburn. I mean, they've got to be feeling pretty good about themselves as they head to Tuscaloosa for Saturday.
I think it gives them as much confidence as they can have going to Tuscaloosa, considering what this season has been. And you look back to those losses to Cal and Arkansas and Oklahoma and on the road at Missouri. What Auburn was able to do, I think that if there is a turning point to this Auburn season, I think it was the second half of the Kentucky game. They came back home and did not play well against Vanderbilt. Did what they needed to do and executed, played penalty-free football against ULM, and then went into that game last night. I had a pretty good feeling going into that game. Now, listen, there have been a lot of times I've had a good feeling and it didn't work out. Vanderbilt's an example.
Right.
But Auburn went into that game last week with some confidence and continued what it started in ULM from an offensive standpoint, from Peyton Thorne's perspective, and Jarquez and Cam and Keandre Lambert-Smith. Those guys continue to play so very well for Auburn. What huge games on the defensive side for Jaron Thompson and Jalen McLeod. I mean, those were huge tackle games for those guys, for Auburn. And for, you know, Jaron, who played almost all of his career at Texas, but he's one of those 29 seniors honored before. I mean, those families lined up from goal line to goal line for pregame ceremonies, didn't they? For those 29
seniors. Yeah, they really did.
In that pregame. And I'm happy for guys like a Luke Deal, who has played more Auburn football games than anybody in history and has lived a lot of life at Auburn, to go out in a home game with that win, and now trying to go out for the regular season with another win, trying to get Auburn's first win in Tuscaloosa since the comeback in 2010.
It's an easy group of upperclassmen to root for, you know, whether it's guys who are in their first or second year with the program, or, you know, I've got a special place, you know, in my heart for the guys that are in year 4 or year 5 who could have left. Jarquez Hunter, Luke Deal, Brandon Frazier, Tate Johnson, Jeremiah Wright. Like there's a cast of characters in that regard. Chapman is in that mix as well. So I mean, those guys getting to enjoy triumph in their final game at Jordan-Hare Stadium. And I know some of them might have an extra year of eligibility. It's crazy to think with that crowd for Senior Day on the field that there might actually be some guys who are, you know, going to pursue another year, you know, with the options available in college football these days. But no, it's an easy group to root for, and it's nice to see them get that big win and snap a pretty lengthy streak against ranked opponents for Auburn. And Andy, I got to listen from Alaska to a lot of your call, and just want to congratulate you on an outstanding job Saturday night. I think that there's a chance, especially the final call, but it wasn't just the final call. You brought the moment to life with your words, you know, throughout the throughout the game. But I think that final call of yours is going to be something, you know, people remember and maybe might find its way into a highlight reel at Jordan-Hare Stadium.
I've heard it on national radio a couple of times.
Radio and yeah, I mean, and I guess also what a night, what a final night for that scoreboard too,
yeah.
Right?
Thank goodness. Yes.
Indeed. I mean, good riddance. You've done a great job, but please, I will most definitely enjoy the new video board.
All of us who can't see the South one are really looking forward to that. Andy, I know you've got to run, get everything ready for this evening.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. It's been a fun trip. My first time to Hawaii, and it's just a stunning setting here. But here to do the ball games and get ready for some film study. Do some pregame interviews and then get ready for a 10 o'clock Central Time tip-off tonight. We're on the air at 9:30 on Wings 94.3. If Auburn wins tonight, we'll be playing again tomorrow night at the same time. So some late nights. I hope we're playing well past midnight these next few nights there in Central Time. And then get on a plane midday tomorrow and fly back and get back to Atlanta about 6 o'clock Eastern Time Friday morning. And get into the office and do some last-minute work and get ready to head to Tuscaloosa on Saturday. So and, looking forward to it. I'll be happy to get back to the mainland, but looking forward to these next two nights of basketball for this Auburn team.
Oh, absolutely, Andy. Really, really appreciate you being able to get a little time with us here on the drive. Best of luck here on the next couple of ball games, and happy Thanksgiving to you and Jan.
Excuse me, guys. Thank you very much. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. Hope it's a safe and a joyous time, and we'll be talking with you as this remarkable season continues for Auburn.
All right, Andy.
War Eagle.
Andy, I was waiting for that. Got to have the close. Andy Burcham joining us here at the top of the Tuesday drive. We'll get to our first break. Love for you to join in as we continue.
Hey, this is Jacob
Gold. And with Drew at the controls here on this Tuesday. It's the final day for all of us here together because Drew is gone for the rest of the week for Thanksgiving. I guess it was text that misunderstood and said, you guys are off today, right? And I went, no, we're off Thursday is the only day that we're off. Thursday is Thanksgiving, but we're on today and tomorrow, and then back on Friday, on Black Friday and Iron Bowl Eve.
Nearly all week, we are going to take the Thanksgiving Day off, and so you can get, I guess, ESPN Network programming that day. But no, we'll be back. We'll be here tomorrow to recap Auburn, North Carolina, and then on Friday. We'll be previewing the Iron Bowl and talking about whatever else happened in Maui. So yeah, I mean, we were saying earlier that Auburn, one of the programs Auburn hasn't really seen in this run with Bruce Pearl over the last couple of seasons is Michigan State, and there's a chance of that in the tournament with Michigan. I mean, did they win? Did they advance? They're in the.
They play the next game.
Yeah,
this is the first game is underway. I tell you what, they have been great games here in Maui right now. Colorado and UConn is a tie ball game with 5 minutes to go, and Danny Hurley has lost his mind a couple of more times today.
Yeah, and he we didn't talk about it yesterday.
No, we didn't. I did not realize. Well, I mean, I didn't realize what had happened because we were on location and I wasn't able to watch or be able to see some of Hurley's post game comments.
No, you can't. I thought it was I thought he earned it. You know, he earned a tech in the moment.
Absolutely, he did.
And it's a pivotal moment.
And he complained. He was complaining about it on and on and on about not only his tech but the call. I mean, I'm sorry if you. I don't have a problem if you jump up over somebody and you get a rebound, but it doesn't matter if a player is attempting to block you out or not. If you come through them and over their back, it's a foul. And that's what Hurley just lost his mind saying, you can't make that call to decide a game at the end of the game. Absolutely you can if it's when it's an obvious foul.
So Michigan State plays Memphis in the next game in the bracket. Mm-hmm. Auburn, right. The Auburn North Carolina will play the Michigan Memphis, the Michigan State Memphis winner in the championship for the Maui. And yeah, those are two. Memphis with Penny Hardaway. He's got a talented team. They beat UConn yesterday, and then Michigan State with a familiar name for Tom Izzo. I think Jace Richardson is Jason Richardson's son, right? So the former NBA player who played at Michigan State, 20 years ago or so. Now, his second generation player playing for another coach. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. You feel like Michigan State's one of your more solid bets year in and year out in all of college basketball, right?
Right.
They're gonna play his style, and they're gonna play. And they're usually gonna be pretty good at it. Especially when league play rolls around and when the tournament rolls around. North Carolina, Auburn's opponent tonight. There's some news with North Carolina athletics, not just involving the basketball team, who has a very big game tonight. But Bill, do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't. I've had the 2-year-old at the house most of the day, so I've checked a couple of Auburn sites, haven't seen anything.
North Carolina announcing that Mack Brown will not be back next year as head coach
of
the football team.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he. Well, but although yesterday he said he'd like to be back.
I know he said he'd like to be back, but it seems like North Carolina had been moving in the direction of Mack wasn't going to be back.
Yeah, Mack is 73, and Bubba Cunningham made the decision, or informed Brown of the decision yesterday, as per ESPN.com's article about the termination. A decision, as of press time, a decision had not been made about whether or not he was going to coach. I believe he... I thought I saw somewhere that he was going to coach the game this weekend against NC State.
ESPN says he will.
Okay, so he will coach, and then the bowl game I think is still up in the air.
Right.
So he will coach. Mm-hmm. He will coach Saturday against NC State.
No decision yet about the bowl game.
Okay, and I think that opens up an interesting job in college.
Yeah.
I don't want to sweep the Mack Brown of it. I mean, highly successful career, national champion at Texas. Did a good job at North Carolina, more or less these last couple of seasons. I think you've always thought, Bill, that North Carolina is a program that can that could maybe hang with the superpowers in college football with the right guy.
They're a basketball program, but they have I think they have the potential of being. We've seen it; they've been more than competitive. At times over the last, over the last 2 or 3 decades, but it's the inability to consistently do that. But no, I think they have the wherewithal to be able to do that.
Any names come to mind when I tell you North Carolina's looking for a new coach?
I don't know. I would think
CBS.com or CBS Sports had, let me give you some candidates they tossed out there. John Summerall, Tulane.
Mm-hmm. John Summerall is going to be a name on just about everybody's list, I would think, especially in the South.
And we'll talk about the college football playoff rankings. Maybe that's something we'll focus on with Jake Crane in hour number two, because I think there's a lot of really interesting possibilities out there. ESPN.com's projection, their most recent one, did not have Alabama in the field. Alabama's the first team out.
They shouldn't be with 3 losses right now,
I
don't think.
First team out, though? Is that where they...
That's where I've seen them on 3, I think, different projections.
Yeah, I mean, you have...
They could get in with not too much help.
Right, well, there's the... Although with 5 conference champions sort of making things difficult, then you need to be able to jump one of these at larges, because if an Arizona State or a BYU or a Tulane, like, I think there are teams that could get into the playoff from outside the top 12 because they need a 5th conference champion in the mix. And that 5th conference champion thing, like, it seems clear whether it's Alabama or somebody else, there's going to be a 9-3, maybe even a 10-2 major conference team.
I don't have a problem that there's a 9-3 team that doesn't make it.
But ten and two would be
tougher to swallow.
Maybe even 10-3 because they lose a conference championship game or something like that.
That's what I mean. That's going to be tough. It's going to happen. Going to happen, I think, to somebody.
You could have something like that happen.
But what would really stink is if there's a 10-3 team that is bumped for a 9-3 team that doesn't make a championship game.
Okay, so I'll finish because we've branched off into two segments. Carolina coaching candidates that CBS.com listed. You got Sumrall, Barry Odom, UNLV, Jamie Chadwell, Liberty, Dan Mullen mentioned as a as a possibility. Deion Sanders. I don't think Deion Sanders is jumping from Colorado to another college job this offseason.
I'd be surprised. The ACC, I wouldn't think. Even though Florida State is in the ACC.
Yeah, but
I don't think so.
Is Florida State going to clean house and go hire a new coach?
I don't know.
That's a big contract they gave him, right? They were very good last year. They are very bad this year.
Florida is liable to wax those Seminoles, and they're going to be 2-10.
I mean, you think about teams. I mean, is it going to become more common for teams to have huge seasons and then be 2-10 a year later because everybody left? But this was – the Florida State was a preseason – I mean,
they were a top 10 team.
This is maybe the worst season ever by a preseason top 10 team in the AP poll, what's going on there at Florida State. So, no, I mean, if they decide that they need to go drastic – it's sort of understandable, right? Because this season has been drastic at Florida State.
Those are some interesting names. I would think North Carolina will be able to get, probably one of the names on that list.
I would think so. Okay, so ESPN Plus has the playoff bracket. They're thinking your top four right now: Oregon, Texas, Miami, and Boise. Because you got those have to be conference champions. Right. And right now, Boise's ahead of, I think,
of the Big 12.
Of the Big 12. Uh-huh. Your five seed's Ohio State. They've got Ohio State playing 12 seed Arizona State. Arizona State, Big 12 champion, and the fifth conference champion in the mix.
Big 12 still way up in the air. I mean, it's crazy. This weekend, we still don't even know. I mean, going into the weekend, who's in the Big 12 title game?
Right. I think ESPN's basing this off of the fact that Arizona State is most likely going to be the highest ranked Big 12 team in the college football playoff rankings.
I would think so. Arizona State's really playing well for Kenny Dillingham.
Right. Kenny Dillingham, one of a couple former Auburn assistants that we may talk about in this segment.
So, I would think that some of the more visible power conferences are going to be interested in him as a head coaching candidate.
So 12 seed Arizona State, there's the projected Big 12 champion. The winner of that would then play Boise. So it's Arizona State, Ohio State game, and then 11 seed Indiana, 6 seed Penn State. So you'd have a conference matchup there. Mm-hmm. Indiana unlikely to make the – Indiana would need a win and then a loss from either Ohio State or
– title game?
Yeah, I think their Big Ten title game chances are unlikely.
They're probably better off not making it.
But if they beat Purdue this weekend and finish 11-1, you think they should be in.
I do.
Yeah, and I think that's probably going to be how this thing plays out, even if they're in but maybe outside the top 10, or even ranked 10. Speaking of number 10 in this one, number 10 SMU at number 7 Notre Dame. In the projection,
that's an interesting matchup
featuring Rhett Lashley, the head coach there at SMU. I believe this is a projection that has SMU losing the ACC championship game because they've got Miami as the 3 seed again. Oregon won.
I wouldn't bet against SMU in that ball game.
At Notre Dame.
I mean SMU Miami.
Does Clemson still have a path or is that set?
I don't think it's set.
Maybe Miami loses, I think Clemson gets in. Yeah, because Miami still has a conference championship. Miami still has a conference game, right? That's Syracuse. Okay, Miami still has Syracuse. Thank you, Drew.
Right. Clemson's done. They've got South Carolina.
Yeah, and I think Miami is, and ESPN even says Miami currently projected at 3 because they are ranked ahead. Mm-hmm. They're going to be ranked ahead of SMU. Speaking of conference matchups. Do you notice the two teams I haven't mentioned, Bill?
A couple of SEC teams. How about Georgia and Tennessee?
Georgia. How about number 9, Tennessee at number 8, Georgia, in ESPN's projection of the bracket? And the winner of that game getting number 1, Oregon, in the next round.
You know the SEC and the Big Ten would love to get in there and lobby and see if they couldn't not have conference rematches there in the first round. With Indiana, Penn State, and
how do you feel?
Georgia,
how do you feel about conference teams facing each other in the first round of the college football playoff?
I'd rather it not, but if I looked at it and that's the way it should be. Unless there was just no difference at all. If I could say, all right, 8 and 9. Well, is there any difference in 9 and 10?
Would you be okay detriment? With moving a team from the 10 seed to the 9 seed or vice versa because they want to avoid having teams?
No,
I wouldn't
be averse
to
that. Especially if I feel like there's not that much difference in those teams. Who was number 10? SMU.
That was SMU. So if you wanted to move Tennessee to 10, they would play at Notre Dame, and then you'd move SMU to 9, and they'd play at Georgia.
Yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with that. What was Indiana and Penn State.
Yeah, but you have three.
That was like, five, what was it?
11-6. 6-11? That's 11-6. Yeah. And the other problem there is, I mean,
who are you going to move?
Well, you could move.
You're going to move 5 or 6?
If you wanted to swap Notre Dame and Penn, well, okay. If you wanted
you
to swap.
5 and 6.
You could move Notre Dame to 6, yeah. And then you'd have Indiana at Notre Dame.
Oh, and that would be an in-state.
Yeah.
Matchup.
You could have Indiana at Notre Dame in that situation, and then you'd have Tennessee if you're moving.
Penn State.
Tennessee and Penn State.
I like that.
Yeah.
So maybe I would do that.
Yeah. Maybe you do that instead. I don't know. I mean,
just for more cross sectional, you know, matchups.
Yeah.
I think that would be neat.
You'd have more exotic matchups, yeah. I think, in that situation, too, which I think would play well. I don't know. I certainly wouldn't want that influencing who gets in.
No, not at all. I think the 12 teams should be determined, and then you do the best way you can to avoid. A rematch or a conference matchups. I mean, sometimes you probably couldn't help it, but I don't think those moves would be anything that would cause screams from anybody.
No, if you have the four home teams set in stone, like if you've said, all right, well, we know that Ohio State, Penn State, Notre Dame, and Georgia are going to host,
You're not changing any of the teams that are hosting the first round games.
Right. You've got your top four set in stone, and you've got your next
four set in stone. And your four home sites.
If
then you adjust.
If you wanted to play matchups there and decide, okay, well, let's not have a bet. No, I'm right there with you.
All right. Let's get to our bottom of the hour break. We're a little behind. Love for you to join in. I don't think we've mentioned the numbers because we got right to Andy. You can join us on the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. That number's 334-321-1390.
Tell you what, if you missed Andy too, he was outstanding as always. He's Andy Burcham, and he was. You can catch that on the podcast. We'll have that up, you know, as soon as the show's over, wherever you get your favorite podcast. That's presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, or they also sponsor the text box 334-564-1840. So yeah, big shout out to Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
As we go to the bottom, of the hour break, 20.9 seconds left in the first game of the Maui Invitational today, and UConn leading Colorado 72-71. Colorado with the ball, and they just had a rebound that was the same basic play that UConn was called for the foul that got they got Hurley losing his mind yesterday. We'll update you on that. Get to the phones when we come back here on the Tuesday Drive.
Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 20 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Tuesday afternoon with Bill and Dan. Drew at the controls. The Colorado-UConn game is not final. There are 5.9 seconds remaining, and Colorado leads the defending two-time national champions.
Buzzer beater up.
And it is
no good,
and the game is over, and UConn has lost back-to-back games. Actually, Danny Hurley's much more collected right now than I expected him to be, as Colorado knocks off UConn 73-72. This has been a fabulous tournament. I mean, the games have been unbelievable.
This Maui tournament has felt like
it's felt like the
NCAA tournament.
The Elite Eight.
Yeah, the quality of basketball, the way these games have all come down to the last moments, these high leverage final possessions. I mean, these incredible finishes, these comebacks. Mm-hmm. Like it's been an incredible day and a half of basketball in Maui so far, and you've still got a nightcap on one of the biggest days.
Three more games today, but including the two winners, two winners matchups.
You know, if you can, I know we'll talk some college football playoffs as well, but I mean, today is such a huge day for regular season college basketball. Yeah,
not just Maui.
No, I mean, the matchups all over Division I. You've got in different parts of Vegas tonight, you've got Houston and Alabama, and you've got Duke Kansas. Those are going to be going on at the same time in different gyms. That with Auburn, North Carolina, means that six of the top 12 are playing each other today in non-conference matchups. You already had, San Diego State Creighton played earlier today. A&M and Oregon are at the half right now, and you know it's a loaded day. Really, and yeah, and Auburn, North Carolina, a fitting nightcap to a day like this.
Yeah, you're right. Let's get to the Drive hotline, 334-321-1390. And Yellowhammer is up first. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. So I'm wondering this. We got the 12 teams in the playoff. Some of them have to play a conference championship game, and I would think it would be an advantage to not have to do that, because you could rest up, heal up, work on some things, and that seems to me a kind of a ball and chain on the teams that have to do that.
Well, if you feel like your team is in the college football playoff field already, I don't disagree. I agree. I mean, I think it'd be great to just know that you're in. The concern that some teams have is will another team be able to get in and bump them out, perhaps by not playing? But that's not as likely.
To me, the big question regarding conference championship games this year would be, if Texas A&M beats Texas and loses to Georgia in the SEC championship game, is a 9-4 Texas A&M team that just beat Texas and played in the SEC championship game, are they getting in to the college football playoff over 9-3 SEC teams that didn't?
South Carolina and Alabama.
And Ole Miss,
for instance,
would all be, all three of those SEC teams there.
I wouldn't think so. I would think even if A&M beats Texas this week, I don't know that they're going to jump into the top 12.
I would consider putting A&M with a win over Texas over those other 9-3 SEC teams. I would, if you told me A&M beats Texas.
Yeah, over the other 9-3, but I don't know that they'll be in the top 12.
I don't know if any of those 9-3 teams will be in the top 12.
I think there'll be a three-loss team in the top 12.
And if there wasn't the requirement, and I think this is going to become a subject for debate this offseason, if there wasn't the requirement to include five conference champions, we absolutely would be talking about a 9-3 SEC team in the college football playoff field right now. ESPN has Alabama as their first team out.
ESPN will always have Alabama in if they can.
But they've got other 9-3. They've got other 9-3 SEC teams in the discussion as well.
But they're going to have Alabama at the top of the list, regardless of who's played the toughest schedule.
But I suspect the college football playoff committee will do the same thing.
They will too, because their name is Alabama.
Well, and Alabama does have three wins over top 25 teams. Like they have the win over,
and they have losses to 6-5 teams.
Right, but I think if you make it sort of a beauty pageant between 9-3 SEC team, like, would you rank South Carolina?
Well, the College Football Playoff Committee has said strength of schedule doesn't matter. It's the margin of losses is what they said mattered last week. We'll see what they changed that to tonight
Between Bama, South Carolina, Ole Miss, and A&M, do you feel like there's one clearly that should be ranked ahead of the others?
I think South Carolina.
Despite having lost to Alabama and Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Because two of their, because that's the, you know, that I guess, you know, Ole Miss and A&M and Alabama fans would say, like, they're, you know, head-to-head should be a factor in here somewhere.
I look at the feeling that there's always been about college basketball and who's playing better coming down the stretch. And South Carolina is playing much better. They're on a five-game winning streak right now. And if they beat Clemson, that'll be an impressive win to cap off a six-game winning streak to close it out.
Ole Miss probably has the best losses in the sense that they're all close games. Like, I think that three granted Texas and Florida. Yeah, granted, Kentucky and Florida.
One top 25 team.
Kentucky and Florida aren't great losses. No. And the other one's LSU, which is looking worse.
Yeah, LSU's got a chance to be a five-loss team.
You know, it's the fact that they were only, you know, they were by, what, 3 points, and then, you know, two by 3 points. They're all one-possession games.
Yeah, they are.
At least. But you're right. There's the absence of, I mean, there. But other than the Georgia win, there's the absence of needle-moving wins.
That's right.
on that Ole Miss
the
schedule.
The best team they played, they beat.
And that's great. Yeah.
What about if Texas beats Texas A&M and then loses to Georgia? What happens to Texas?
I think they're both in.
Oh, okay.
Because Texas still just has Texas would only have two losses
there. I think that the interesting question is, and Texas is probably still in with a loss to A&M. This weekend, I think Texas would still probably 10-2. Texas would still find a way into the bottom of the bracket, but they would lose. They would lose the bye and the chance. You know, they'd lose the chance to compete for that because I would say if you have a Texas Georgia SEC championship game, the winner is going to be one or two in the college football playoff bracket, and the loser is going to be 5-8, is going to be somewhere in 5-8 and still get to play a home game. If Texas were to lose to A&M,
they might drop to nine.
Yeah, they might drop to nine or lower where they're not playing a home game in that first round anymore.
Okay. Well, that's going to be clearer after this coming Saturday.
Yeah, we'll be more clear after Saturday. We'll at least know who's playing in conference championship games. And that is one thing this 12-team playoff has done, is there are more games that matter coming down the stretch that affect so many different things as far as the conference championships and therefore then the college football
playoff. You know, it matters more outside the SEC and the Big Ten, I think, as far as the conference championship games, because that's when you're getting into teams that are playing for their playoff lives a little bit more. A&M's the exception, because A&M probably needs to, you know, A&M's a team that needs to win these games. Because of the loss to Auburn, A&M now needs to win these games to make the college football playoff at all. But some of these other teams, you know, in the Big Ten, feels like Oregon and Indiana and Ohio State and Penn State are most likely in, regardless of which one of them ultimately wins the college football or wins the Big Ten. But when you get into the Big 12 and the ACC and, you know, some of the teams that can still, you know, Tulane and Boise and some of the, you know, outside those two leagues, conference championship Saturday will be tremendously meaningful as far as deciding who's in the field.
Oregon has a championship game.
Oregon is going to play for the Big Ten championship against, I think if Penn State wins and Michigan beats Ohio State, it's Penn State. If Ohio State beats Michigan, it's Ohio State in the rematch against Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So weed them out quick.
Yeah, but even still, I think Ohio State, Oregon, and Penn State will all make the college football playoff. Regardless of what happens in the Big Ten,
and it looks like they would all be in the top eight.
I would think so too.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Appreciate it, Yellowhammer. We'll get to our final break of hour number one. You mentioned Jake Crane. We will talk to him at the bottom of hour number two. But until then, our phone lines are open 334-321-1390. Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Out of joint or vice versa.
4321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan with Drew at the controls. A couple of minutes left here, and as we're heading to break, we both you saw it first. I had seen notification of an email, but news from Auburn is Karen Hoppe, Auburn soccer coach for the past 26 years, is retiring. Karen led the program to 7 division championships, 1 SEC regular season title, a conference tournament championship, and 18 NCAA tournament appearances.
There's a quote from John Cohen in the email from Auburn. Quote, Karen Hoppe's incredible success over 3+ decades, including 26 at Auburn, is a testament to the type of coach and leader she is. Auburn soccer would not be where it is without Karen's unwavering work ethic and determination. She not only achieved success on the field, but her program was also a model for success in the classroom and community. On behalf of the entire Auburn family, we want to wish Karen and her family all the best in her retirement, unquote.
357 overall wins. That's 32nd all-time, 293 of those, an Auburn program record here with the Tigers. So, yeah, best wishes, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, where Auburn heads to replace Karen Hoppe.
Congratulations on a tremendous run
yes.
at Auburn University to Karen Hoppe. Yeah, because that is it's quite a tenure and a new era in Auburn soccer without her.
Oh, no doubt about it. So, as we wind things down in hour number one, there's some news from Auburn. We'll talk some more, some football in hour number two, but I mean, it is a very full day basketball wise as well. We'd love your thoughts from last night's game, Auburn's win over Iowa State, looking ahead to tonight's matchup against North Carolina. And of course, your thoughts on the Iron Bowl, Jalen Milroe responding to DeMarcus Riddick today, saying he doesn't even know who that is, with some of DeMarcus's comments.
It's getting petty. It's getting petty in the Iron Bowl this week.
Little trash talk before the Iron Bowl coming up on Saturday. We're halfway done here on the Tuesday Drive. Come on in and join us here in hour number two.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at espnau.com.
38, another one.
36. Welcome in. It is hour number two of the Tuesday drive. Hope everybody doing well on this day that started off with some overnight rain. Had a pretty good rain overnight and cloudy, but the skies broke, sun came out. Looks like it's going to be, I was looking a couple of days ago, they were saying rain on Thanksgiving. Now maybe that'll be behind us, hopefully. Hopefully we won't have rainy weather on Thanksgiving. But as we approach that, there is a lot to be talking about. We, of course, would love to hear your thoughts on Auburn's thrilling come-from-behind win over Iowa State last night in the Maui Invitational as the Tigers win in the final 1.2 seconds on a tip-in by Jani Broome, which put him over the 2010 mark. That was his 10th rebound and points number 20 and 21 last night, leading five players in double figures for the Tigers, who fought back from a 16-point halftime deficit and trailed by as many as 18 in that ball game. They will now play North Carolina tonight, who did Auburn one better. They trailed by as many as 21 and were behind by 18 at the half before they came back and won 92-90 last night. And so the Tigers will take on the Tar Heels tonight. The game expected to tip, if everything stays on schedule, at 10 o'clock local time. And you can hear the pregame starting at 9:30 over on Wings 94.3.
Yeah, going to be a late night for fans of both programs on the East Coast, right? I mean, North Carolina playing at 11 o'clock Carolina time. And this is assuming they can get the game off time, right? I mean, there's some factors that play into that beforehand. But Auburn and North Carolina, you know, a chance for Auburn to pick up a third huge non-conference victory in the first six games of the season. Not to discount, because the FAU, the exhibition opponent, they've looked pretty good to start this season. And I know Vermont just pulled off a nice looking win as well. I'll see if I can get the if I can pull up Vermont's schedule, I'll tell you who they beat. But Vermont has a nice win. So I mean, this is an ambitious early schedule. Auburn with a chance to get a really big win. Another one. In the early going of this season.
Yeah, Auburn is just saw the note that Auburn is just the sixth team ever to beat two top five teams in their first five games and the first in over 30 years to do that. So, I mean, yes, it's very ambitious, but they're 2-0 against top five teams. And North Carolina's not a top five team right now, but their only loss was 92-89 at Lawrence to top-ranked Kansas.
Oh, Carolina?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Carolina's played, yeah. I mean, Carolina's not, and the schedule's not overwhelming early.
No.
But Carolina's loaded with talent. Like, they're a top 10 team in the eyes of you know, a lot of the advanced metrics and stuff, and they're a contender right there next to Duke. In a year where the ACC feels like there are some, they got quite a few teams in sort of the middle, North Carolina's not in the middle of this ACC. North Carolina's near or at the top, and it's another chance for Auburn. I mean, look, Auburn could be playing in Houston and North Carolina and Iowa State. Auburn could be playing three, at the very least, right? I mean, Houston and Iowa State are in the same league, so they can't win the same, you know, they're both Big 12 teams. But, I mean, like, Auburn could be playing conference champions here early on, major conference champion-type teams. I would say between Houston, Iowa State, North Carolina, and Duke, there's a pretty good chance Auburn played the regular season champion in the ACC, and maybe, or Auburn will play the regular season champion in the ACC, and maybe play the regular season champion in the Big 12 as well. Kansas will have a big role to say. Arizona's pretty good. You know, the Big 12's more wide open than it's been. But look, that Iowa State team is a quality. Yeah,
they were tough. I mean, they really were last night. It felt like they had six guys out there on the court in the first half when Auburn was trying to move the ball against them.
And they passed it so well in that first half. You know, they guys didn't take bad shots, and they were like we said, they played as well as anybody has for an extended period of time against Auburn this year. And for Auburn to completely turn things around at the start of that second half, and Auburn made its run a little bit earlier, but I mean, that those first few minutes of the second half, I mean, that was outstanding basketball by Bruce Pearl and his team, and just to see Janai and to see Chad back out
Chad,
there.
Chad Baker Mazzara was unbelievable last night. Came in and hit a couple of huge threes, and you know, immediately made his presence felt defensively, able to get a steal. I mean, it was a great run, as Andy said, 14-2 run to start the second half, and it didn't take very long for Auburn to get back and have that ball game just back and forth. You worry when you're down that many points, sometimes the grind to get you back even takes so long and so much out of you, but Auburn was able to do that rather quickly, and with Chaney Johnson on the bench with four fouls, I mean, he picked up his fourth foul very early in the second half. So that's something good. Chaney should be pretty fresh tonight.
And maybe Tahad too, who didn't play all that much.
Tahad played 19 minutes, I think, last night.
Yeah, and very few of them in the second half. So I think there's a chance that, I mean, as Andy said in the first hour, Auburn's depth was a really big reason why they won the basketball game. And Auburn's going to need that depth tonight to beat a North Carolina team that, you know, after a day after playing one of the great scoring backcourts in all of college basketball, it even gets harder, right?
That was Auburn has played a couple of really good defensive backcourts. That was a very good Gilbert was ridiculous last night. It's amazing how well he played with four fouls for the last 8 minutes. You know, he came back with his fourth foul with 8 minutes to go. It didn't look like he was any less aggressive there down the stretch, but Auburn still able to pull that one off. But yeah, I mean, tonight, R.J. Davis and Seth Trimble are a couple of guys that are good for 20 just about every night. Davis is averaging 20, a little over 20. Trimble averaging 17.5.
I mean, understand how good R.J. Davis is. Like, that is a school. Yeah, where if you're one, and I understand that, you know, guys have the extra year of eligibility or whatever, but like, if you're one of the best ever at your position at North Carolina, if we're not engaging in hyperbole or anything, like, RJ Davis, he's starting his 124th game tonight at Carolina, all of it at Carolina since getting there before the 2020 season. He is as real of a contender for National Player of the Year as there is out there. I would say Jahni Broome, you know, is probably number one
right.
on most of those lists, or should be right now. But guys like R.J. Davis, Hunter Dickinson, if you wanted to expand it a little bit, Cooper Flagg at Duke is a true freshman. Mark Sears is slumping, but I think Mark Sears, you know, could find himself in that conversation mm-hmm. by the end of the season if he plays like Mark Sears. But it's a short list. R.J. Davis is on it. And Auburn's going to have, I think, between Denver and Chad and Miles. Miles has played R.J. Davis before. They were in the same conference back when Miles was at Georgia Tech.
For 3 years, right?
Yeah. So I mean, I think these are it's familiar. But Auburn's perimeter guys are going to have a real and you can't focus it all on R.J. Davis because North Carolina has other shot makers as Dayton found out. Down the stretch, so the defensive
yeah,
effort.
Yeah, well, I mean, Trimble, I was mentioning, is shooting over 50% from three, and you know, R.J. Davis is only shooting. He's 11 for 41 outside with his 20 points per game. I'll tell you one thing: you don't want to do. You don't want to foul North Carolina. Does that seem like that's always been the case? I look and they're as a team shooting 82% from the free throw line.
Right, and they've got younger guy. I know Drake Powell hit the 3-point shot. Off the bench, he was a superstar freshman, and they think mm-hmm. he's going to be, they were sort of bracing for if R.J. Davis moved on, Drake Powell was going to have to step into this big role at Carolina. Instead, he can learn a little bit behind upperclassmen, but he's sort of like Tahad. He's ready to step in and take a big shot if they need it, even though he's only playing in his fifth or sixth college basketball game ever. So, yeah, I think these are it's a blend of experience and very talented youth. And Auburn and North Carolina squaring off. First time they played each other since that Sweet 16 matchup.
Yeah,
back in 2019 in route to Auburn's appearance in the Final Four.
Yeah, so that again, that coming up 10 o'clock tonight is the scheduled time, 9:30 the airtime over on Wings 94.3. We'd love to hear from you, your thoughts on the basketball games from last night or the one coming up tonight. Obviously, some thoughts on the Iron Bowl following Auburn's exciting 4-overtime win over Texas A&M this past Saturday. Media, the media opportunities, I believe, are done for both teams now, as both Auburn and Alabama practice today. We'll practice tomorrow, have Thanksgiving together, do some light workouts Friday as we get ready for the 2:30 Saturday afternoon kickoff at Bryant-Denny.
How are you feeling, Bill, about Auburn's chances of keeping this game close? And I feel like that's, you know, it's a question of, you know, look, maybe Auburn goes out there and they're clearly the better team for four quarters. I wouldn't necessarily anticipate that result.
I would be very surprised.
Yeah,
if that were the case.
You know, respectfully, you know, I'd say, but I think as we say a lot with games where you're a multiple touchdown underdog. Or a multiple score underdog.
Mm-hmm.
If you're, you know, the longer you can keep this game close, right? Like if this fourth quarter is a one possession football game, it's going to be a tense situation in Tuscaloosa. It's not going to be comfortable out there the longer this game is.
Oh, you know,
one or two possessions. And
no, you mean for the crowd, the entire feeling? Yes,
for the sideline. I mean, the closer this game, the longer this game is close,
mm-hmm.
the more uncomfortable things are going to be. What do you feel like Auburn has to do to keep the game close?
They need to avoid, I mean, an early explosion by Jalen Milroe and Ryan Williams. I mean, those are their two game breakers. Those are the two guys right there. They've got to keep Milroe from beating them with his legs. And Auburn's done a pretty good job lately against mobile quarterbacks. But Jalen Milroe is... He's a different cat than a couple of these guys they've played lately. But he is so good moving and making the deep pass. And they've got two or three guys. I mean, Brian Williams isn't the only one. But big plays. Auburn has to avoid big plays that get Bryant-Denny just really rocking and get Auburn on their heels. That's what they've got to do. Auburn needs to come out and they need to get off to a quick start. That's what they did against Texas A&M. They need to get off to a quick start. And at Auburn, you know, it was great because it got the crowd really going. If you could do that at Bryant-Denny to to quiet the crowd down or to really have them start turning on their own team a little bit.
Well, and after the way Alabama played in Norman, right, one would think there's pressure on Alabama to produce on early drives. Like, the more you see the punter early for Alabama in this football game, the unhappier this crowd is going to get. And that's something you can – and Auburn's been in that situation a couple of times this year where it felt like, boy, you really want to – you don't want to squander too many first quarter drives or the mood could sour in a substantial way. And I wonder if that's the case in Tuscaloosa where if you see early struggles from an Alabama offense – That could really start.
Because I mean the offense was just they were bad a good bit of the ball game against Oklahoma, and part of that's credit Oklahoma, obviously. I mean they've been a solid defensive team all year, but yes, I mean if Alabama is having, as you said, if punter has to come out a few times and punt, if Auburn can stop them, and that's the other thing that the Auburn defense really needs to do. They had trouble getting A&M off the field this past Saturday. I mean, they came up with some big plays when they needed to, but the first three possessions that Texas A&M had, they went 10, 8, and 9 plays on those first three possessions. So, I mean, Auburn's they've got to get Alabama off the field and not – you know, not let them start just grinding.
There's so much to break down from the A&M Auburn game. Like when you have a game like that, but I thought it can get so stuff can get lost in the shuffle. A&M is a good third down offense.
They are.
Like when it's
Marcel Reed is a pretty good looking young quarterback.
Part of what was surprising about that last play was it felt like A&M had been making those plays all game long, and especially on third down, especially on drives where they absolutely, you know, possessions.
Oh, their third down conversions were ridiculous. At one point, they were when they were 7 for 10 on third down. 6 of those were 3rd and 7 or longer.
Yeah. It was great. It was like the Arkansas game, except you felt like they were making even more difficult plays. Mm-hmm. They finished the game 10-19 on third down. They came into the game as one of the best third down offenses in major conference college football. They might have something really special in Marcel Reed moving forward. And Auburn was still able to come away with the victory. It feels like it's a similar challenge for Auburn. You know, you feel pretty good about the way the defensive backs handled themselves down the stretch, but there's so much pressure on Kay and Lee and Jay Crawford and Caleb Harris, right, and guys that are going to be Sylvester Smith. Guys are going to be called upon for huge minutes. You know, a lot of snaps against Alabama, and how they hold up. I mean, could decide how Auburn's defense looks in the football game.
Would you be surprised to when was the last time this has been the case that Auburn leads Alabama in both total offense and total defense?
Wow.
Auburn's ahead of Alabama in both those. Now, again, as we said, the total offense hasn't always resulted in points, but Alabama's averaging 36 points a game. Auburn's averaging 29. But, I mean, Auburn's averaging 5 yards a game. They're allowing 5 yards a game fewer than Alabama. And then on offense, Auburn's picking up like 13 yards a game more. So, I mean, the stats are very, very close. I think a lot of folks would be surprised when you look at those numbers. I mean, Auburn is capable. We've seen that all year. Auburn's capable of playing with anyone. They hadn't been able to get over the hump and win one of those big ball games until Saturday. But the fact that they have been as competitive in every ball game, I think is a factor in their favor. Alabama has been up and down.
You know, if you isolate it to just conference games.
Yeah.
Total offense in just conference games, Auburn is number 8 in the SEC. Alabama is 10. Auburn is averaging 404 yards per game in SEC play. Alabama averaging 387. Total defense isolated to just conference games, Bill.
Oh, Auburn's second in the conference in total defense.
That's right.
Giving up just under 325 yards per game. Alabama giving up 50 more.
How about Alabama, a bottom half of the league defense?
In total defense.
In total Nick defense Saban, in conference games.
That I mean, Nick would have aged, you know, another 10 years.
That's shocking. Year. I mean, really I know you're it's but honestly it's a I mean the sample size is the season in conference play.
Right.
We're talking, I mean these are seven SEC games each. We're talking about and yeah, for Auburn and Auburn jumping to 2 in total mm-hmm. defense in the league this year in I mean that is
and that is why DJ Durkin is one of the nominees for the Frank Broyles Award for the assistant coach of the year,
as is Travis, right? I think Travis Williams, I believe, is also on that.
Yeah, and it's funny because
I know Arkansas
have really struggled defensively lately. They're 14th in the SEC in total defense,
and 13th or 12th in scoring defense. Yeah. I know it's not it's not that. And speaking of, and Alabama ahead of Auburn in scoring defense. Which is, you know, a reminder that total defense isn't the only number,
right?
That matters a lot. But it's
well, part of that is 4 overtimes this past week.
Yeah, that's true. Auburn did. Oh yeah, Auburn is, and it's a matter of it's. I mean, it's actually really close in scoring defense. You've got Alabama
without the overtime, there would be 1 point difference in conference play.
So Alabama is averaging 22.9 in scoring defense. Vanderbilt is averaging 23.4. Auburn is averaging
24.4.
Auburn is averaging 24.4. Oklahoma is averaging 24.9. A&M's averaging 25.9. So you've got, I mean, it's close.
Yeah.
With a lot of these teams, then you get into, you know, 26.
But I mean, if you look at the total points, Alabama's given up 160. Auburn before overtime had given up 161. So they're basically the same in scoring defense. We need to get to our first break here of hour number 2. Don't forget, coming up at the bottom of the hour, Jake Crane of Crane & Company joins us, so stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Remember when you would dream?
382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive, 25 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Tuesday early evening. Bill and Dan with Drew at the controls. Yeah, mention a little of the what you want to get into.
Well, I mean, it's a short segment. There's a lot going on this week, but I mean, we're going to talk to Jake Crane about the college football playoff and the Auburn football and basketball stuff to mention. We're talking during the commercial break about the Rays. You know, you got the Montgomery Biscuits in the listening area, so I think there are more Rays fans than someone might think. But I just have this bad feeling as the, you know, I was able to go to some Rays games early on. You know, I've always cared about the organization. It's probably, I think their days in Tampa are numbered, or their days in the Tampa area seem numbered. The stadium deal is on the rocks. The you know, Tropicana Field had the damage from the hurricane. They've made some alterations for the upcoming season. You know, that was the news lately, was that Steinbrenner Field, the spring training thing, is going to be they're going to make some moves to keep them out of the area in the summertime because of the threat of rain. But it just seems like they're not on the same page regarding a new stadium down there, and I would think relocation is on the table, which would be too bad.
Yeah, I would think
because that's
so too.
Because that's an organization that's a fan base that has you got the sense that with a new stadium, maybe they could really be consistently, you know, they'd be able to build something there. But it's I just don't know if it's going to happen, Bill.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we were talking about it. And there's been talked Nashville as a possibility for quite a few years. They've been a very successful minor league franchise, and I don't know. I mean, it is a shame that because they've had so much talent, and they end up having to deal a good bit of it. Good bit of it off.
Do we have any Major League Baseball? I mean, I guess Soto is like the next.
Talk that he's going to.
What do you think?
I don't know. I still think he stays in New York. Either, that doesn't mean Yankees. Either Yankees or Mets, I think.
I have always had doubts that the Yankees would let him leave But maybe
well, I think the Yankees would prefer not to let him leave.
Yeah, but maybe I'm thinking about an old Yankees organization that doesn't exist anymore. Maybe I'm thinking of Larry David. Larry David is George Steinbrenner, you know, yelling at George Costanza about I think this could be maybe Cohen goes and writes
John Morosi says he has offers from 5 teams. The Yankees, the Mets, the Jays, the Red Sox, and the Dodgers. So you've got, just the Dodgers and Mets in the National League and the Yankees, Red Sox, and Jays.
I'm thinking so 400.
Three AL East, one NL East, and the Dodgers. So it's all East except for the Dodgers. Dodgers are the only team, the only team anywhere near, the West. So that's crazy.
I wonder what kind of contract we're ultimately looking at here with Soto and how big of a deal it is. It's going to be, I mean, obviously it's going to be gigantic.
Oh, yes.
No matter what. But I'm thinking I would think maybe the Mets are someone might have to write like a 500, I mean, maybe even six. I mean, six. I mean, it's a huge contract we're talking. Maybe it's the Mets.
Oh, I think the Mets are serious. The Mets are serious, and they're trying to make a huge, huge splash. That's why. That's just what I think. I think the Yankees and Mets, and who's gonna flinch, or who's gonna say, "All right, you're not beating our offer between those two teams."
If it turns out to be, if it's just who's gonna make him the biggest offer, I feel like the Mets might actually, like with Cohen, the Mets might have somebody in place who's willing to win that game.
And the Yankees may have to just hope that he had so much fun this past year and being in that lineup with Judge, that the two of them maybe he could settle for a little less. He's still gonna be one of the richest athletes ever, if not the. When this is all said and done, regardless of whether he takes the highest offer or not.
My guess is he's probably going to ETO, as well. So I think you could have a contract where it's a 10 or a 12 or a 14.
He's 26.
Yeah, I think you could have a contract like that.
Yeah.
But I think he could also give the option to, if he wants to walk after 3 years or 5 years and retest the market, because with the way rights deals are expanding and the way the value of franchises is going up, maybe a guy like Soto 3 years from now can rewrite the market again with another trip into free agency. So I'm sure he could reopen the bidding in a couple of seasons after making a choice. And maybe that impacts his priorities right now. They're all teams in a position to win, but maybe that hurts, the Jays' chances in something like this, or even the Red Sox, who struggled last year. I'm thinking it's a New York team. Right. And
well, it's funny. I see the Red Sox as a team. People are saying, watch out for Sasaki.
Yeah. And there's and I think people maybe and Teoscar maybe is also being mentioned as a spoiler. And I guess you would imagine Pete Alonso could find his way into these conversations, too.
Oh, he will be in some of them. He may not be the first name mentioned, but the Polar Bears going to be he'll be doing all right for himself as well. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Jake Crane of Crane & Company joins us on the other side, so stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Well, evening. Bill and Dan here in the studio with Drew at the controls, and we're going to head to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar and welcome in our good friend from Crane & Company, and that is Jake Crane. Hey, Jake, how you doing today, man?
Man, doing a lot better after we finally won one.
We were talking. We had Andy Burcham on at the top of the show, and I said, Andy, if you it's hard to imagine an announcer having a more fun 3 days than Andy has had from Saturday night with the way that ended to last night's basketball game.
Yeah, well, I mean, as you well know, Andy's one of the best in the business. His call at the end of the Auburn game was just fantastic. and then to be able to marry that up with a big comeback win in the game, Bill, where I think the biggest compliment you can give the Auburn basketball team is they didn't play well and beat a top five team at a neutral site.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact we can say that about Auburn basketball is just it's mind-boggling to me. So, yeah, it's a lot more fun when you're able to win and get those big calls in a way that helps your personal fandom.
I think they played pretty well in the second half. They put together, I mean, the first half, we were talking about how, I mean, Iowa State, and you don't know how the rest of the season is going to play out for any of these teams. You want to be careful about, you know, crowning someone too early. I'm pretty sure Houston's good, and I'm pretty sure Iowa State's good after watching those two teams play. And for Auburn to face down a good team that had built a 16-point lead.
They put 50 on the board against that defensive team.
Yeah. And the next couple of minutes, you know, the first couple of minutes of the second half, Jake, is some of the best basketball Auburn has played all season.
Yeah, well, I think maybe a better way to frame it is, you know, from a complete game standpoint, from a peaking standpoint, mm-hmm. you can tell this Auburn team can play so much better. And really, at this time of the year, I'd much rather be peaking as we get toward March as opposed to doing it right now. We see it every year with a ton of different teams. So, yeah, they were able to put together a second half that was really impressive. You know, get what Jani Broome is able to do, that you know, his length and his ability to hit those in-between shots and now extend it out to the three-point line pretty consistently is such a weapon to have. It's like a tight end that can block, you know, and catch for 150 yards and take a post for a touchdown. So you just look at the amount of ways this Auburn team can win, and you shoot 71%. From two against Houston and put up the type numbers you did against them, and then you drop an 81 piece against an Iowa State defense that is very, very well coached, and that's a very talented team. If there's two teams right now that I would feel good on Auburn's schedule about saying they're going to be there at the end, it's definitely going to be Houston. Watch what they do to Bama tonight, and then Iowa State, which I think has a chance to be a Final Four caliber team. Gilbert's an incredibly talented player.
He really is. I mean, he was fantastic last night, coming back in with four fouls playing the last 8 minutes and nearly single-handedly bringing them back once Auburn got that brief lead when they finally were able to take over. So, yeah, North Carolina's going to be another fun one tonight. That's a talented team that's only loss is 3 points at Kansas.
Well, you know, it's funny. I watched the whole North Carolina-Dayton game last night. As crazy as this sounds, I think we match up better with North Carolina with what we're good at as opposed to Dayton, because if you look at North Carolina, they've got some young, talented players in the front court. Washington's got a chance to be a good player. But Zeb Key is you know, the transfer from Ohio State, who's now at Dayton, was really dangerous and is big enough, I think, to give Jani some problems. So it's a guard-heavy team. You know, Auburn's got a lot of depth. I think this is a night where Chaney Johnson may have a big night for himself mm-hmm. after last night getting into that foul trouble.
Yeah, he didn't play very many minutes. Neither did Tahad, really. I mean, he played 19 minutes last night.
He hit some big shots, though.
Yes, he did.
That step back is just devastating.
Yeah, I mean, Carolina, I think the front court is the big question going into tonight, right? They don't have anybody averaging more than 6 rebounds a game. Withers and Washington, I think both are – you know, they're in for a real battle if they, you know, if they're going to go one-on-one with Broome, and Broome's real good when you try to send some help. Like when you try to double team Jani Broome when he's got the ball, he's more than willing to pass it to one of his shooters on the perimeter. So how they handle that matchup, you know, how North Carolina protects the rim against Auburn's bigs is going to have a lot to do with who wins tonight.
No, that's why I think kind of a, you know, and Auburn needs to play the pace they want to play, but I wouldn't be surprised if Auburn tried to slow it down a little bit in this game to get into those offensive sets. And then when you look at North Carolina, R.J. Davis, he's the one that helps them go. Trimble's a guy that can hit open shots. You know, the code kid has a, you know, he's scrappy. He can do some things at the rim. But again, man, I tell you, I look at this Auburn team and just the versatility of scoring, the length. I tell you what, it's really, look, and I know Pettiford's not a huge guard, but it's really nice to have big guards. You know, we hear Bruce talk about that all the time, but having bigger guards late in the game, not just offensively, but defensively, man, it is such a luxury to have.
Oh, you're right. And it should be another fun one tonight. Don't want to run out of time before we spend a decent amount of time, though, talking about Saturday. After this past Saturday, look, Auburn had been, I was thinking as A&M was coming down, you know, was coming down the field to take that 31-28 lead, I have never seen a team continue to play as hard and continue to lose games the way Auburn had before they were able to get that last-second field goal to send it to overtime and then win it. How big was that for them to finally get over the hump against a very talented team? I'm not going to be stunned if A&M beats Texas this Saturday.
I think they're going to beat them. You know, I think this is an A&M team that, you know, you talk about front sevens that are big and athletic. I was really impressed with the Auburn offensive line going up against that group. They're not as good in the secondary, but they're really talented in the front seven. But, Bill, we were all thinking it.
Oh,
every
yeah.
Auburn fan was feeling exactly how you were feeling as that game was unfolding. Here we go again. And it was huge. I'm so happy for the older guys. You know, I've been one of the people talking about Peyton Thorne, and it's been true for most of his tenure at Auburn. It hasn't been good, but it was nice to finally be able to give him his flowers. And, you know, doesn't make up for all the other stuff, but I was just really happy for the older guys. Obviously, the younger guys to get a taste of that. But that win was so big for the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if you lose that one, it's going to be tough to beat Bama Saturday up there with this personnel team. You were staring at 4-8 with no big wins. You know, maybe recruiting suffers because of it. But just having that feather in your cap is going to be so massive as we get close to the real signing day in December. And for the future of Auburn football with the recruits that were there. But as far as the way the game went, you know, you look at the young guys that continue to make plays for this Auburn team. And if there's one thing you can take from this year, it hasn't been an uberly successful year as far as a wins and loss standpoint. But whether it's Riddick, whether it's Crawford, whether it's Falk, whether it's Cam Coleman, Auburn's got some. You Connor Lewis.
Caleb Harris.
And Caleb Harris. I am so impressed
Malik
with this
blocked
younger
him.
Group.
You got a defensive line. You got a guy on the defensive line, Jake. That's a true. Yeah, maybe the single most impactful in a senior laden room. The single most impactful interior defensive lineman Auburn has this year was a guy who was playing at Pike Road last year.
And it just it makes you feel good. And guess what? These younger recruits that Auburn are recruiting want to play with talented young players on the roster. They want to grow this thing together. You are about to see a boom in Auburn recruiting like you have never seen before. And do not be surprised if we look up in the fourth quarter of that game in Tuscaloosa and Auburn has somehow found a way to stick in it. I'm really happy, you know, for Coach Freeze as well. The fan base needed this one, man. Mm-hmm. It feels good to win one again.
Well, one other point about the atmosphere too, Jake, because I know sometimes, you know, amid Auburn, you know, Hugh Freeze had lost 8 home games in his tenure leading into that A&M game, and folks had sort of rolled their eyes at the way Auburn
the mystique of Jordan Hare.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think to see, because Auburn at its most dangerous is able to present Jordan Hare not just as this intimidating atmosphere, but also as a party that every college student in America would want to attend. Right? You think about those. I mean, you can go back further than 2004. If you want. Yeah. But you think about the crowds there in 04, the 2010, 2013, after the Iron Bowl in 17, right? Like these have been moments where Auburn, and it's not just high school recruits in the stadium. The transfer portal is going to open in a couple of weeks. And I have to imagine, like, college football was watching on Saturday night when Auburn beat A&M, and they saw the scene after the game was over, and recruits all over college football, are going to maybe more seriously consider Auburn. And it's not as though Auburn has a long list of things they need to address in the portal, but, you know, it's
a very important short list of what they need to address in the portal.
Yeah, well, you know, I came on here last week and said I'm sick of having to rely on just Jordan Hare being some magical Hogwarts place for Auburn to win a game. When the magic really comes through is when Auburn has a good team and it's that final thing that gets you over the hump. That's where the magic really comes in. You just can't rely on it to show up and not play good and somehow you're going to win the game. You saw those two things kind of come together, like we saw the kick six, not to that level, like we saw the prayer in Jordan Hare, not to that level, but it really did affect A&M down the stretch. And to your point, You know, and it's not just, guys, when you talk about the transfer portal, it's not just that you did it, it's when you did it. You won. That is kind of the last taste of Jordan Hare that recruits and guys in the transfer portal are going to have for this year. And we are all guilty of recency bias. But also Auburn, look at what Keandre Lambert-Smith, what he's been able to do coming into the transfer portal that Hugh Freeze can look to at some of these other guys in the portal and say, look, not only are we going to bring you in here, not only is there young talent where you can shine and be a mentor, which looks good to NFL scouts, but we're going to give you the ball. You can be productive here. You can continue to advance your professional future here. So it was just all good. I'm just more excited for the Auburn people, man. We deserve, because we always show up and show out, whether it's football, whether it's basketball, it doesn't matter. We're always there. It's just nice to see the football team come through.
Meanwhile, what is happening in Tuscaloosa? I mean, that is as Jekyll and Hyde a team. I mean, they are talented. They are really talented. But, I mean, they can be just bad at times.
Maybe the most surprising score in Southeastern Conference play this season,
yes,
is Oklahoma 24, yeah. Alabama 3.
Outside of the Vanderbilt game, I think I agree with you 100%. It's not just that you lost, it's how you lost. You know, attitude reflects leadership. I don't think Alabama has any consistency because I think the culture is different. Say what you want about Nick Saban, but you had a pretty good idea of how Alabama was going to play, not only each week, but in big games. We know they're talented. They're still talented. I don't know if Kalen DeBoer will ever have this talented of a team again. The problem is they're undisciplined. They don't play as physical. There seems to be a little bit of individualization going on at that place. And don't be surprised if you see one of their top players on offense, not named Jalen Milroe, who's the young guy, playing in the Big Ten next year. Just remember I said that.
Yeah, this is you're right. I mean, when you talk about the fact that coming into a season, imagine preseason, somebody tells you Vandy's going to score 40 on Alabama and Alabama's going to score 3 in Norman.
I mean, look, it was a big question after you replaced the greatest of all time. You know, was the ship going to keep on just cruising or was it going to hit an iceberg? And while I don't think it's hit the iceberg yet, it does seem to have shifted toward the iceberg. And if they lose this weekend, you might as well start getting that guy playing the violin and getting with Billy Zane and heading toward the lifeboat.
Oh no, Cat! You know, unsinkable Molly Brown territory. You think that's where you're?
Watch what's going to happen in recruiting. Just and with what's going on with that roster, there's some things that people don't know that's going on that's been going on, which I think. I think it's going to rear its head here pretty soon.
Well, in just about an hour, I expect that we're going to see Alabama being the first team out. So they've still got an opportunity with not much help if they can take care of business against Auburn.
Yeah, it's just going to be tough. I mean, for any three-loss team outside of Texas A&M, who still controls their own destiny, I think – you know, with Indiana being probably going to finish 11-1, Purdue's terrible. Notre Dame probably going to finish 11-1. I still think Notre Dame would get in, even if they finish 10-2. You feel good about Georgia. Obviously, Georgia would still have a chance if for some reason they lost to Georgia Tech because they're already in the SEC championship game. I think they would be the one seed in the NIT the way I see it.
Yeah, I don't really know. Like, I mean, the path for a 9-3 SEC team to get in right now involves an upset like Syracuse beating Miami this weekend. Maybe. I wonder if a 9-3 team.
I disagree. I think the ACC is only getting one in anyway.
Ooh.
I think the path for Alabama. Well, I mean, think about it. If Miami wins the ACC championship and they beat an 11-2 SMU team who would have lost the conference championship, I don't think they're getting in. The Big 12's only getting one in. Notre Dame's going to get in, which is going to take a spot. The G5 is going to take a spot. The Big 10's going to get 4 in. I just think you run out of room. Now, what would be funny is if Nick Saban was at Alabama, I still think they'd have a pretty decent chance to get in, but he's not.
Well, they're still higher ranked, and I'm a little surprised they're the highest ranked 3-loss team. But I think that's still because their name is Alabama.
Now, where's Clemson fitting in this discussion, Jake? Do you think South Carolina's winning this weekend and a 9-3 Clemson team sort of out of the conversation?
Well, I don't think they're out of the conversation, even if they lose, Dan, because I think Syracuse is going to beat Miami, which puts Clemson in the ACC championship game to play SMU. So I actually like South Carolina in this game.
Yep.
It's going to be tight. It's a true pick'em. And if South Carolina wins this one and Syracuse beats Miami and Clemson goes to the ACC championship and beats SMU, that's a really good resume builder for South Carolina as being a 9-3 team that could get in. But that's assuming that A&M loses as well. Because, you know, I don't think they're going to put two teams with three losses in the SEC, in the college football playoff. If A&M were to beat Texas and then beat Georgia in the SEC championship, I think Georgia would still go at 10-3. Obviously, we know A&M would go winning the SEC championship. What's really going to upset people in the SEC is Penn State and Indiana both getting in at 11-1, despite not having any big wins. But I can't argue 11-1 versus 9-3. I can argue 11-1 versus 10-2, but that's not where we're at.
What do you think the committee does? We were talking about this earlier. If A&M beats Texas and then loses to Georgia in the SEC championship game, like does that probably close the door?
A&M's out.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Would you be okay with A&M like if there are other 9-3 SEC teams, right? Because I think something you said earlier, Jake, is really interesting. If you think the ACC is only getting one in, then I think there's a spot for a 9-3 SEC team, potentially, whether it's Alabama, South Carolina, Ole Miss, or I guess you would have 9-4 Texas A&M in that situation if they beat Texas and lost the championship game.
Yeah, 9-4, the only way a team that loses the SEC championship game isn't getting in is if it's A&M, and I think the committee would be right to not put a four-loss team in that had a chance to clinch not only a position in the playoff, but a bye as well. That's why, guys, this ranking that's coming out tonight is so important.
Yes.
Where South Carolina is compared to Alabama and Ole Miss, I think is going to tell the story on which 9-3 team has the best chance. If they're behind Ole Miss, I don't see how, you know, even beating Clemson, if Ole Miss beats Mississippi State, they would put them ahead of Ole Miss, so it's a moot point anyway. But if you're a South Carolina fan, you need Texas to beat Texas A&M. I think Texas is in regardless, but you also need to beat Clemson and then hope Syracuse, like I said, beats Miami and Clemson's able to beat SMU and put them in the playoff. That's the only way I think you could vault over maybe a team that beat you in the head-to-head. And that game was at Bama and it was 2 points. So I don't think it'd be out of the realm of craziness for it to happen.
It is great to have this kind of craziness, though, here at the end of the season, Jake.
It is.
Yeah, great stuff.
It's amazing.
Yeah, no question. Let everybody know what you've got on tap with Crane & Company here for the rest of the week.
Oh, man, well, we had a huge Iron Bowl breakdown. Go to YouTube, Crane & Company, C-R-A-I-N, and Company. It's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Roku. We got Josh Pate coming on Friday as well to preview the rest of the games. And look, if you love college football and college basketball, go check it out. I think you'll like it.
Great stuff. Happy Thanksgiving, Jake.
See you, Jake.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving. Dan, Bill, please tell the family I said hey.
Absolutely.
We need to get to our final break. Back to wrap it up here on the Tuesday Drive.
Dixie Electric Plumbing and Air rallies for you. No matter the problem, Dixie will tackle it. Our licensed and trusted electricians, plumbers, air, and garage door technicians are ready to win for you. From toilets to garbage disposals,